So welcome and Shabbat Shalom. Thus beginneth the lesson for today. Shoftim. Shoftim is on page 1143. And today we're going to be discussing justice and ethics. But ultimately, I want it to be about our soul. I mentioned a few weeks ago about the shofar and how important it is to be bent, to be humble, to be focused on the center, and not to be cocksure, so to speak, haughty and stiff-necked. Mishpatim, shoftim, are known as judges, but truly the book of shoftim are not judges at all. The book of Shoftim are warriors, they're generals, both male and female, and they are in this counter, in this first line, to being adept, swift, grand vision, and facing battle, v'shotrim. You have on the one hand your generals. So, in this translation, it says, you shall appoint magistrates and officials for your tribes. All right. Anytime it says shall, I'm not buying it. So I just want to walk it back here. Shoftim veshotrim titen necha. You need both generals and a shtar in Hebrew. What's a shtar? Keter shtar ubia in Ketubah language. Anybody in Hebrew, what is a shtar? I need the shtar. I need the document. I need the bureaucrat. I need the accounts receivable.
The paperwork.
The paperwork. Famous story for me at Camp Ramah, and I've been working on this my entire life. I was noted by a psychiatrist that I am a typical ADHD personality. In my kind of peripatetic nature, constantly moving. What was that? I need this, more coffee, this coffee, less. I know there are certain personalities in our beloved congregation that hold well.
We know them well.
Yeah, some of our best friends. So, and this was in the context, this was 20 years ago, pre-medication or even pre-etiology of illness, that his theory, and it's one that I support, is that that kind of energy is the energy of a general. That's the energy of a director, producer. These are the energies of rabbis, often.
Especially just, around here.
Well, perhaps. With kavod, with kavod. And yet, a general or an ADHD without the executive function is not effective. And this is really the trick of, I mean, take a Robin Williams, who I think also typifies an ADHD, Zichrono Livracha. He was an executive genius in the way his thorough thought through was. Now, he was, and this is why I'm going back to my chauffeur, he was all over the place. But you pull back. And remember back to this through line. This is not about sin and redemption. This is about how we live, how our lives. And I've spent a lifetime, my mom refused to believe that, here's a great little midrash about me. My mom, I have terrible, this is really open, so I'm glad this isn't video. I have terrible toes, the grossest toes in like, really bad.
I was only a mother.
There you go. So my mom says it even more. She says, right, mom, you know, why? Is it genetic? Did your grandparents or what? She said, you know what it is? God put everything bad possible about you
in your toes.
In your toes. So the rest of you could be perfect. I love it.
Only a mother could say that.
Only a
mother,
right? But to that, it was not this ideology of what's wrong with you and how do I fix you. It's celebrate that. You don't need that. You're not, you know. And this Shoftim B'Shotrim, just to return back to this one text, because I really do want to talk about how we balance ourselves, the izun, these are the scales of justice, how we understand ourselves. With both Din and Rachamim, you've got to be hard on yourself. It's not okay. Micah, really interesting, but where were you going?
Mm-hmm.
What am I supposed to do with that? I'm really challenging myself in this month of Elul not to say, I love you, you're great, I love you for who you are. I do, and thank you, Mom. But I also am challenged to have shoftim v'shotrim. Shoftim is also mishpat. Shofet is to make plain, to lie straight, to flatten out. And shotrim often is that the document, the seal, is the evidence of your work there. And so I've begun each of these classes with a kind of a in-the-round discussion, and I wanted to do that today. And I just want to say in honor and kavod to our rabbi, Rabbi Bernstein, she presented on Wednesday, and, you know, she's, what, 3 weeks out now from her surgery. It's remarkable. Her gait, her movement, she is a dancer, she is an inhabited spirit. And there was a through line. She clearly is not in the same kind of plinth, matzeva. You know, she's just incredible, yes, but within it, a tremendous elegance and a recalibration to her soul. Yeah, it's manifest, and it's just a great blessing that we have such a leader who takes challenge and turns it into, and I just saw that in her energy as she moves. I say this to myself because this is the question that I pose to you with this balancing, and we're going to be focusing very briefly on this beginning of Shoftim v'Shotrim, but the second line of the Torah. My question to you is this. Have you ever felt that you are so straight to everyone else outside, and yet you have worked so hard internally to readjust and recalibrate, and actually you are filled with twists? And anybody a computer programmer? This is like the code just says, you know, what you see is, hello, my name is. But underneath that code is like thousands of lines of gobbledygook that is just trying to get you to that point. Has anybody ever had the experience of a recalibration that the external, the output seems so simple? Yeah, got a cup of coffee with a friend. The internal, the crazy, the putting on the face, the taking off the face, the changing the car, the parking, the lot, oh my God, in a parking lot, I will have more anxiety in a moment just to get the, you know, the ticket and the, what do they call that when you... This is, I think, how so often we live our life, and I'm not saying that that's not healthy. I think it's the crooked timber of humanity, is to quote Isaiah Berlin. We all have these recalibrations within ourselves. So my open-ended question to you, to invite you to consider, and you can take a moment, when has your external output felt like a shofar blast? Ha, 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 ha. Mm-hmm. But you know it has taken so many twists and turns for you to be in that place. Either in yourself, in your family, or in your community. Is the question clear?
The answer's not.
No. Exactly. No, it's very hard. It's very hard. I'll give you one more example, and just, you know, God bless my wife, you know, we would argue for the sake of heaven, you know, good fights, good deep head and heart fights. To get to the place in that evening that we could come back together, was a lot of rebalancing, you know, because there's a lot of give and take in a passionate struggle to understand one another. But our children, you know, when we say Shema at the end of the night, see the external, see that place. That's just another example. And I just think the more that we can be open about who we are and who our lives are in this space, the better we are for it.
I think issues like that, we were actually discussing that at the KI men's group a couple of months ago. Many parents face this. How much support, I'm not talking about a mental illness situation, how much support do you give, and when does support become enabling, and how do you make your own decision about that? How do you balance off the strict judgment, if you want, and the compassion. And it's a very difficult challenge. I can't speak for women. I can speak for fathers because I am one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know many men, it's extremely, extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. Because you do, and particularly then when you have two parents, one of whom is more on the compassion side and the other who is more on the tough it out hard side. But this is a very difficult balance in any of us who have children. I'm sure you've been through that. And you mentioned this before, we have the difficulty with ourselves. And that is, it's very easy for me, and I know other people, to be extremely judgmental about myself. And a lot more difficult to be compassionate about myself, to give myself a break, and then say, well, you know, am I just doing that because it's the easy way out? So I think these are challenges that we have as human beings.
Let's return just for a moment. We're going to continue with this. Please hold your thoughts. Just now, let's return 1143. I just want to read this as clearly as I can, mm-hmm. but just to hear the tension now that we've shared these mm-hmm. stories. Verse 19, you shall not judge unfairly, which literally tate is coming from a tent architecture. You can't stretch the plane. Verse 19, chapter 16, verse 18, page 1143. Lo tate mishpat, you shall not stretch the plain judgment. You shall not become familiar with faces. You shall not show partiality. You shall not take bribes. We're now turning the page, 1144. Do not take shochad, bribes, because bribes blind wise eyes. And they literally singe, yisalef, srefa. They singe just words. And then it immediately goes into idolatry, which is interesting. Because it's trying to connect Deuteronomy, Moses in this, but Deuteronomy immediately connects ethics and idolatry, something we spoke of last week. So I want to return. I think it is saying both the plain meaning and its opposite meaning. We want to be fair, we want to be blind, justice is blind. If we are purely blind, we will be unjust. We will not mitigate justice fairly. We are constantly balancing justice and compassion. So when Moses says, you'll never listen, you're never wrong. Well, hold on a second, you know. You never were, you never did, you never can. Not true. However, we do want to have fairness in our judgment. We want to have equitable society. I can think of no greater example of this tension, which comes one of the most famous parts of our Torah and, oh gosh, which is Lex Talion, an eye for an eye. And now I want you to turn to the sheet that I have passed out. And forgive me if they have not on the art side. Everyone knows this. We shall have Lex Talion is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, an arm for an arm, a life for a life. Okay, this is part of our Parsha today. And what I brought before you is, so justice needs to be absolutely egalitarian and fair. And therefore, if you poke out an eye, you take an eye. That's the simple read. But of course it's not so simple. Has anybody read this piece of Talmud from Bava Kama? It's one of my faves. So this is just one example of this challenge of Lex Talion. of eye for an eye. It's taught in a Brita, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, an eye for an eye. It's referring to cash, money. That if you poke out my eye, we value that eye and give money. We don't poke out another eye. And it's just to refer to some other cultures to actually cut someone's hand off for stealing. The brutality, the lack of justice in this equity, false equity, is, I think, clear to all of us. But just here, he says this, Shimon ben Yochai. Do you say it's referring to money? Or is it only teaching? You cause the injury, you should actually lose an eye. What if there was a blind person and he blinded another? Or there was a guy with a bad hand and he severed the limb of another? Or another great case of this is, what if you are a watchman, meaning you could have one arm, no arms, you're just watching the field, and then there's a violin specialist. Do you get to cut off his hand? Right? Do you cut off the woman who's a violin expert, or someone whose eyes are, you know, the Talmud says, put a thread through a pearl? Well, what if your eyes, you don't do anything with your eyes? You, I don't know. What doesn't take eyes to do work? Anything?
Deep sea divers.
Okay, deep sea divers perhaps don't. So right here you have this case of Judaism, and I hate it being called hypocrisy. I don't even think it's irony. I think it's what John Rawls, anybody legal theory, John Rawls would call the veil of ignorance. To counterbalance all of the various needs and reflections to create equality takes a tremendous amount of twisting. So that when you look at a class, let's say, of affirmative action, and really now, 25 years ago, this is not an aside, this is actually our teaching, but Sandra Day O'Connor said, well, hopefully in 25 years we'll be in a place where we won't need this anymore. And she was the decisive vote back in affirmative action 25 years ago. This University of Texas case, most recently, John Roberts is clearly not in support of Sandra Day O'Connor's positioning, and he believes that that's how you make an ethical society, without the veil. And for me, this is a society working so hard to twist itself ethically to create equity. So that, I don't have to use politics. I'm really, by the way, very careful for those that are listening. Mm-hmm. Look, politics and religion are very fused, and it's very hot. So for now, let me just stay in the tepid waters of spirituality, and as we understand who we are as a community, and I'm really waiting in some ways to hear from you where we are as a community, how to move forward in this way. So, but John Rawls, his veil of ignorance in order to say, well, if everything were blind, everything were equal, that's easy. But everything is not equal. So take this Torah study, for example. As simple as that. Some people know Hebrew very well. And some people are new to Hebrew. I could say, on the one hand, don't use Hebrew. Everybody's equal. I can, on the other hand, say, too bad, got a translator. Come on, step up. That's the baseline. I want you to be there. But of course, good ethics is taking each and every person into consideration in that balance. And now back to Bert's point about family, and Margot, somewhat to you too. Everything is fair, right? Fair. You need 200,000, you need 200,000. Done. Well, that you went to medical school, you went to art school. Done. You got any education you want. We know that this kind of distributive justice is unjust. We, in our kishkas, you can look at the line and say, fair, but each has a different place. How we do that is by setting the standard of Lex Talion, of equity, of fairness, And then we work our tuchuses off to make sure that that really does come fair with equal access.
But it's still very confusing. For example, a couple of examples.
Please, please.
One is a parking ticket here. Everyone gets charged $64. In Norway or Sweden, one of them, they are charged a percentage of their income. And what is the difference between equality and equity?
Yes.
Standard example is if the fence is 5 feet high, so the 5 foot 6 inch person has a view, right? The 4'10" does not have a view, but it's equal, right? If you want equity, you have to give the shorter person a bench, so that makes it, that's equity.
That is wrong. That would be an excellent
equal.
Rawls, that is an example of Rawls. How you make these slight adjustments in order to level this playing field to give people that opportunity.
But is that,
another example, one more, that was good. Equity and equality. Tzedek, tzedek, tzedek. By the way, this goes back to the first line, justice, justice you shall pursue. The first round, for sure, I'm trying to figure out equality. Okay, apples to apples. Well, you know, Concord, apple juice. And then you take very much differently. Now, here's the problem, is that with your fence metaphor, we think, okay, it's a bench. Well, why don't we cut a hole in the fence? Well, there are so many different ways to create the different veils. And in medieval, we're going to get this in a moment, the veil is ruach, the veil is spirit, the veil is actually this thin line in medieval theology between the corporal, the body, and the totally ephemeral. So the veil is this semi-transparent way to negotiate these things. Mark and Chuck. Yeah.
Two things. All you have to do is look at the morning paper and the whole discussion about bail bonds having people with no money pay cash. And so, you know, it plays.
Finish that out in the morning paper. So just.
The issue is poor people can't raise money to get a bond. Therefore, they have to spend time in jail. Whereas a person with money having done exactly the same thing, gets to take a loan. Both people are in an equal place. So, all I'm saying is that the point you're raising is not theoretical. It's actually happening in real time at this very session. The other thing I want to talk about was in terms of this veil. I kind of see it as a veil that sort of separates your soul from your life. And in order to go through this journey of tzedek, you have to put the veil aside, make it more porous, let your feelings and your sense of justice play a big role in how you resolve the debate.
So, Mark, in your metaphor, is the veil opaque, semi-translucent, or translucent?
The capacity to be off, depending on what's happening at your moment. When you're ready to blow the horn, someone who just cut you off, the veil's pretty thick. On a beautiful summer afternoon, with all
translucent. So I'm challenging you here in that, at least in medieval theology, this goes back to actually Ibn Ezra, that the veil is your spiritual armor that allows God in. So instead of trying to remove it, which then you would be so naked to the world that you would be destroyed, this is also Kabbalah, that you use that veil as your own semi-translucence to protect. So in fact, I'm just trying to flip it for you as this metaphor. When you're about to shout, your veil comes up and says, no, I won't. That is not your soul. So that it actually thickens in that moment, and that when it is ultimately, like Yom Kippur, The veil is white. The veil is absolutely pure. And this challenge of equity and society, I do believe, is political. I think it's ethical. I think it's personal. And I think it's also, I want to challenge Dean and Rachamim. Too much twisting. Let's take public schools and IEP, individual programs. The balancing of each of these children and everyone needing their, and God bless, we're working so hard to give the best to all of our children. Perhaps that does not inequity. A class of 35 students and 6 students have the IEPs that 85% of the time is spent on the 4 students that are making it, but is that ultimately tzedek? And the radaf, it is the pursuit of this justice that is so important. Tzedek, tzedek. Yes, Jody.
This is exactly what I want to say, because for me the message is justice, justice, shall you pursue, not shall you achieve. And I think that if it just speaks to this, if this is your intent, pursue justice, you might make mistakes, you might get it wrong, where clearly for bail bonds, that is not the intent. I mean, the intent is we need to make some money, and we need the money, and we hope these people skip bail and get bail. It's a money-making venture. It's not to pursue justice, because if that was the case, everyone would just spend their time in jail, and there would be no money-making. But I think it's really, really important for me that we just, that I try to go to my life, through my life, justice, justice, shall I pursue? Might make it right, might make some mistakes. But if my intent is for justice, and for me, that's what it says.
Yes, please. Juan, and then Judith, thank you.
I agree with Jody, because to me, it's always but mostly the journey that's important.
Right.
And whether, having been, I'll give you an example.
Yes, yes.
I'm off the beaten track here, but we once went on a trip. I took 40 rolls of film. 3 photos turned out because there was an issue with my camera that I didn't know about, obviously. And my husband wasn't very happy about this. And I said, has it ever occurred to you that I loved every minute of taking all of those photographs?
Yes.
And I've got them here someplace, but, you know, it really satisfied me to a certain extent. But next time we go on a trip, I will make sure to pursue the end result a little differently.
Yes.
So,
but your intention is not to screw up photos.
And
absolutely.
So Rodev.
I'm all for the journey.
And this pursuit, just to put it in context of Israel, you know, the Rodef, which was the death of Rabin, was in some ways from this Rodef term, meaning you must pursue justice if someone is undermining the cause of justice, the state of Israel, and in this case, Oslo, for this Yimach Shmo, I will not mention his name, I do it with a cross outline like Amalek. So, you know, Yigal Amir, an ill man who was given tools that were a bludgeon to this Rodef, which is not a pursuit to as a means. It was a pursuit as an ends, and that really has made us a less just society in that pursuit. It's very powerful, the camera story. And I don't take pictures because I don't take pictures at all because of that pressure of framing that moment, and that I would capture it somehow or not. And it wasn't just missing the moment. That's a totally different thing, but it's this. And I just remember when we used to travel, and you remember it had to go through the X-ray machines and all those little canisters. And I don't remember which one was the quarters and, you know, the change canister, and which was the stress of that moment. I'm like, you know what, I'm giving up pictures in general. And that may be a tragedy, but, you know, my kids look gorgeous, and I'm okay with that. Yes, we had Judith and Bert. I do want to get to Ecclesiastic. This is absolute. Now, we could talk about idolatry or how they manifest this, but it is, this is, I just want to say, okay, you want the Torah portion, which just says, if it is among you too hard to figure something out, ki yipale mimcha davar lemishpat, if it is too baffling to decide, it tells you right there explicitly, there's no answer. It is not plain. And you have to trust the best people in the time to do this, and it can't be a single opinion. So powerful. So, yeah, Judith and then Emperor.
Just one comment on the bail that you mentioned. I want to give kudos to KI. They did have a talk, and they had one of the major advocates for bail reform speak here one Friday night.
Kol hakavod. Kol hakavod. There is a Tikkun Olam Justice presentation coming up, both in Social Justice Fair and at the end of the month at September. A talk about gun control in this very same, like bringing the best scholars to this place.
The best people. We have the best people.
Amen. Bert, and then on
it. Judith was first.
I said before. Judith?
Yeah,
did I say?
Yeah, but I didn't get to then. So now, I want to go back to your initial statement about you're going through this month of Elul working on a goal for yourself.
Yes.
And I understood, maybe incorrectly, that the goal was to make peace with this turmoil that goes on within you and that goes on within all of us as to how we decide to come to a point of pursuing justice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember, like Margot, I have had a child who was mentally ill with schizophrenia. She was also an addict, and she died 8 years ago, not from addiction. And in part, the turmoil I had was, what part can I play in this child's recovery into life? She was born with terrible problems.
Yes.
And it just got worse. But finally, the addiction problem got so great, I couldn't deal with it anymore. And I saw my other children saying, Mom, it's killing you, and it's not helping her to allow her to continue this way. So I had to say to her, Nina, I can't see you anymore.
Mm.
I can't talk to you anymore. Lose my phone number until you're clean.
I will return back to the Torah on 6, verse 6, page 1145. Al pishne edim, o shlosha edim, yumat hamet. Lo yumat al pi ed echad. A person shall be on two witnesses or three witnesses that causes the ultimate demise.
Well, my other children did it. But the good thing after all that was that she decided she could not cut herself off from her family.
Mm.
And she was clean for the last 13 years of her life.
And that was, you enabled choice
instead of enabling
other ways of capacity. And so, Margot, I think that actually is very healthy. It is not black or white.
No.
It is not lease or no lease. It is how do we set very manageable goals to reduce the spiritual VIX index. You remember this? The spiritual volatility index towards incremental steps towards health. And then two, three witnesses to bring as you have, and to know that this is done with both chesed and din. The problem so much is that we're all chesed, and then it kind of, you know, we want
the other way.
We want everything for our kids, or too much din.
Margo struggled with her son and the struggle I had, and I think every one of us has had some
absolutely
differing degrees of struggle with. How do we make a decision that is just, or at least in pursuit of justice?
So back to my own personal, you know, I'm really trying to, look, thank God, I feel blessed and loved. It's huge in this first month here. I do. That is not a license to just stay in my nice schmaltzy, not schmaltzy, but my nice original teenage self. If I do, but what I'm struggling with right now, quite frankly, is if I try to straighten it out in one spiritual chiropractic, mm-hmm. I'm going to end up in traction. My mind does go this way. You know, Robin Williams, could you imagine him being a stenographer? Right? If you try to, if you try to do it all over, right,
it looks like Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, exactly. And so this current tzedek tzedof, the approach, and that's in conversation. So why didn't you? Because this is a conversation, love. It's a conversation, and each time we have more information and hearing where you're at and hearing your help, I have more knowledge. That is just now. That is justice, and I'd say back to bail bonds and back to our incarceration system. That's not justice. You know that 7 out of 8 people that when they do sentencing by video conferencing, it's something quintupled when there's someone face to face. Al pi shne, in the face of, a judge must be panim el panim,
face
to face. When you have the mediated experience, I used to do Skype pastoral visits. I thought it was so great tech, you know? And I was doing a wedding talk. I'm giving you all my good stuff, you know? It's like week 3. I'll run out of interesting things to...
No, we'll give you new things.
Yeah.
So they're in Boston. I'm in San Francisco, and I love this. I love this woman. She's highly neurotic but wonderful. And the guy, yeah, he was okay. So he was
lucky.
He was okay. He was lucky, but he didn't realize it. So meanwhile, they're saying, you know, we're this. I don't know, this venue, that venue. You know, chicken or fish. It was one of those silly, you know, wedding talk. The Skype link was weak. I said, you're breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't see you. You're breaking up. Call drops. I get on the phone. There are tears. Rabbi, you said what we couldn't say. This wasn't about chicken or fish. So it's not about 500 or 200. We want different things in our life. He's off to medical school and residency, and you know, I want to support him, but he's. You can't write that. You can't. And you know what? That's where humility in this face of this Torah, and this is where idolatry is when we objectify justice. This is why I think constantly it is putting idolatry back, this matzeva, this stone. By the way, we used to pray under trees. We used to pray under stones. We used to be able to go to the beach and pray because we weren't praying to the ocean. We were praying to the God above. When we objectify, when we turn it into this is the answer, I follow these 10 simple steps. God bless, 12-step programs are very powerful when we treat them as halakha. And by the way, law, when we treat them as this, oh, I did the steps. You know, I've done the paleo, I've done the 40 by 40, or whatever these things may be. It is a journey and a process. Journey and a process. Yes?
Rabbi, one of the statements in here, which is really... jumped out at me is
page and verse.
Let the hands of the witness be the first to put the condemned to death. I mean, it's all of a sudden I looked at that and said, that can't really exist in our society, does it?
Oh, yeah. Look at the Luca Brasi. I mean, just go back to the Godfather. The Godfather never had his hand on the death.
In our justice system, let's say in Israel, do the witnesses, they don't put condemned to death.
Well, by their words.
No, that's not what this says.
This is actually...
They want the witness to go through the process of suffering
excellent.
Or experiencing
David, yeah?
What he decided.
David.
Yes.
Yeah, David.
Execution, right.
So now, hear the irony here. What did we just say right before the one person that his hand is on the death? What did we say you must have?
Two or three or four.
Right.
Therefore,
and
hear Deuteronomy's irony. Just hear the irony. This goes back to Sotah. This goes back to some of the assumed, some misogyny, yes, in the Torah. But a lot of it is, it's a legal fiction. This is written post facto to try to show justice, but I don't. Do you remember Life of Brian? Stone him! Who are these people? And if you can truly be that one person and you have three people, that is profound. this sense of justice of pulling the button. And I do believe that, and it's something that's a personal struggle about capital punishment, that when the family is there, there are cases in certain states, they allow that person, that administration, for this sense of recompense. The stories that are following that feeling of pushing the button, meaning electrocuting an individual that murdered their children, for example, in a painful way, they do not have that sense of... The stories that follow that don't necessarily give you that sense. But David, for you, I was midrashing your story, and that's not fair. Was that powerful for you? Was that just to you that you must be that? That it's a powerful statement. What did you appreciate about it, or
I think what I got out of that, and this is not the first time I've thought about this, is that that is the ultimate test. Mm-hmm. Of your own integrity if you're going to testify against someone.
Yeah.
Are you willing, if the sentence is death, are you willing to stand up? Or is there another way that this is not addressing? Because I don't think there'd ever be capital punishment if you had to have the witness pulling the trigger.
You're assuming there a level of compassion, a level of compassion and humanity that sadly all people don't share. There are in fact vindictive people in this world. There are in fact,
sure,
you can see it on the news, people without.
But that's not how these societies work. I would doubt in Israel. Well, first of all, there's no capital punishment in Israel. But in a
one
country with
Eichmann. Yeah. One. Yeah. But that was representative,
right,
that every
right.
every Jew got to put, and I'm asking openly, this is such a, so far afield that I want to get to everyone, do we feel justice? Did that really balance the whole thing?
No.
That was an open-ended question, obviously.
Yeah.
A little leading, forgive me. Yeah, please. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
It's very powerful,
right,
that moment.
So I want to like just ask, like, why we're talking about this now. I mean, I know that's like obvious, it's now, mm-hmm. and it's about to be what comes next, is going to come next. But the justice stuff seems so core, to me on some level, that it feels implicitly that it's actually about how we show up in community. And even the point about the witnesses and do we choose to, that is about community at its core. How do we commune as a society? The idea of a stone pillar, I don't know, but I would ask, in like Jewish mysticism, the idea of destroying that thing, are we not talking about the actual body of a man, but we're talking about that false notion of who that man or how that man manifests? I think about Instagram or Snapchat.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading.
Mm-hmm.
There are kids, teenagers now, who are chasing, asking their mom and dad, can I get plastic surgery to look like my avatar, my false idol? And when we say no, how do we become conscious of where we're creating a stone pillar, and how do we collectively hold space to dismantle that pillar?
So that is why you shall appoint. It does not say that. I'm going back to the beginning, 1143, the very first line. You must be a general. You must be a you must be strategic warrior and a bureaucrat. Titen lecha. Give that gift to yourself.
So it doesn't say appoint?
No. Titen lecha.
It says kind of become yourself.
You make... Give it to your lecha.
Reflexive.
It doesn't say lechem, you. And in the context, you were talking personally, spiritually, absolutely. When God says to Moses, psa lecha, shnei luchot karishonim, make for yourself two sets of tablets like the first, the Midrash is clear on this. It means you carve yourself. Idolatry, the only idol in this world, the only object of divinity that you can carve is you. And that is why this challenge is to both be that general, that strategic visionary, and that and that technical asset to become that. And yes, when you become ossified, that is the awakening of this. This is to shatter the false spiritual exfoliation. I can give you 1,000 metaphors, but it's all the same. And why? Because desperately in the end of Deuteronomy, Moses is letting go. This is that. Oh, we talked about this. This is that hug before they go off to college. And you're like, and another thing, and another thing, and another thing. How you doing? Oh, my God, I just let my kid go to public school. Oh, my God, dude, sup. It was crazy how much tension there is in nothing. Just walking around from period to period. There's only so much, you can't hold his lunchbox. He's in ninth grade. It's time for him to shape himself. And it's really challenging. I did want to show you this, and I hope that I invite you to look at material arts even in these final moments. What I was showing you here was, in below is from Trier in 1250. This is how synagogue and ecclesiastica, this is often in many churches and cathedrals around Europe. You'll see this, two examples of what the church is and what the synagogue is. And the first one is as early as 830. Early, we can't even call it medieval period, that's Byzantine, and in manuscript form. And there's anti-Semitism in it. Clearly, you can see her crown on the right is tipped. Do you see how petty the two tablets are? Mm. And then her crooked staff of judgment. But the finest example, and this comes from Dr. Vivian Mann, who was my professor working at the Jewish Museum and a brilliant scholar and really helping me reread, just like Torah, reread art. It seems as if that is the theme of Ecclesiastica and Synagoga. This is from Strasbourg in 1230. If you look here to the left, Ecclesiastica straight upright with the chalice. Versus synagoga, blind, the crooked staff, and the Torah in her hand.
Hanging.
Well, down.
Yeah.
Now, I know that I've already fronted you with about an hour of this corrupt justice and blind justice, etc. I challenge you with this. Take a look at that picture. Who really is more beautiful? Just look at her contrapposto. Look at the natural Torah of that stick, which actually comes from Isaiah, this staff of the 12 tribes that is organic. She's holding law, but she's not committed strictly by it. It is not about my crown. It is about her grace. And this is Dr. Mann. I'm quoting her midrash, which is, actually, blind justice, using Torah as its guide, but not as its chalice, and taking this is Isaiah Berlin, the crooked timber of humanity in hand, is more dignified and elegant than in this kind of, I could say, Madonna-like church with her strong staff and her upfrontness of justice. But I feel that she is not as strong as synagoga in that way. I love this piece. And you go to churches and it can either dishearten you and say, oh, they were always anti-Semitic, or you can try to look at some of these artists. And Strasbourg, as we know, leads Strasbourg on the border of France and Germany, that leads to the Dreyfus trial, that leads to this crooked timber of our own humanity. And so with that, let us give both Amisha Beirach for those that are ill, if there is a dissemination of...